So many characterize this case as not only a religious battle, Didi, but also a parental choice battle. A group of Muslim, Christian, and Jewish parents suing the Montgomery County Board of Education after it wouldn't let them remove their elementary-aged kids from lessons with LGBTQ plus themes. The Supreme Court on Tuesday, signaling support for religious rights of parents in Maryland who want to remove their children from elementary school classes using these storybooks with LGBTQ characters, a policy which initially was in place. Mark Caleb Smith, a legal expert at Cedarville University, tells us parents argue not having an opt-out option burdens their First Amendment rights protecting religious exercise.
Parents have simply asked for the ability to opt out. They haven't asked that the curriculum be changed.
Between 2021 and 2024, several states have enacted laws that require parental notification of LGBTQ plus instruction. Some of those include Montana, Arkansas, Florida, and then in the right there, New Hampshire. All states where parents can also opt their kids out. Now, in the state of Maryland, parents can opt their kids out of parts of sex education classes, but not other parts of the curriculum. The Associated Press is reporting a decision in this case is expected by early summer.
All right. Well, that's one of the cases that the Supreme Court has been discussing this week. It's been pretty, it's gotten a lot of press coverage, which for which I'm very grateful. And the thing they're talking about, one of the many things, this was an exchange between Neil Gorsuch and Alan Schoenfield, who's the attorney representing Montgomery County Public Schools, defending their position. Was it like for three-year-olds, they had a book, little book called Pride Puppy, a book that tells the story of a family celebrating Pride Day when their dog gets lost in the parade and the effort to reunite the pup with his loved ones. And so their defense, that's just one thing. And so Neil Gorsuch got into an exchange with the attorney, and he says, Gorsuch says, and they're being used in English language instruction at age three. So Schoenfeld, the attorney, replies, Pride Puppy was the book that was used for the pre-kindergarten curriculum. That's the one, Gorsuch responds, where they're supposed to look for the leather and things and bondage, things like that, Gorsuch responded. The attorney, it's not bondage. It's a woman in leather. Gorsuch, a sex worker? The attorney, no, that's not correct. No. That was the exchange. Now, look, I'm actually not this morning going to zero in on this topic, even though I could, because I've had a lot of experience with this. This fight has been going on in public schools since 1994. I can tell you firsthand when my son was young. And I got involved in it in his school. But I'm not going to talk about that today. The thing I want to talk about is the importance of the courts in our lives, the decisions that they make, how it affects us. And more importantly, the thing we're going to talk about today is how the court's dysfunction is causing so much to break down. It's causing obstruction, especially for President Trump and his agenda. And it includes things like this, transgenderism, men that he has declared, you know, since day one almost in the Oval Office that men are men and women are men. Women are women by executive order, as though you needed an executive order to make that the case. But he's been fighting DEI policies, all of this, and the courts continue to interfere. They're interfering on these using the Enemy Alien Act to get enemies of ours out of the like Trinidad and Aragua out of the country. Then the courts are doing nothing but obstructing. So what's going on here? What's going on with the Supreme Court, where we got a 7-2 decision over Easter weekend, stopping the president from deporting illegal immigrants temporarily? It's just 7-2 decision. And so we need to talk about that and understand a little more what's happening with our courts. And we're going to do that in just a minute. Well, of course, the Supreme Court made a great decision a few years ago when they just struck down Roe versus Wade. And we're very grateful for that. So I want to remind you, as I talk about this, that the courts have done some good things. But that's only possible when we nominate or select good justices. But the decision on abortion has really, in spite of that decision, abortions have gone up in this country. And of course, a lot of that is because of the abortion pill. I think 60% of abortions right now are from those two pills, the one that kills the baby and the one that expels it. It's really disgusting. horrible for women. I don't care what is written. I can just tell you it's horrible. Preborn is seeing that. Women are coming into the clinic carrying their little dead babies, hoping that preborn can help them, but it's too late. Now, preborn does has a thing that counters the abortion pill. And for thank God, if you can catch it before the baby expels, you might be able to stop this process. So that's the good news out of this horrible news. And preborn does that along with, of course, showing moms their babies in utero in order to persuade them to keep the babies. So you have been a huge part of making it possible for them to save so many babies' lives and really to redeem the mothers' lives too. It's $28 for one ultrasound. And if you go to preborn.com/Sandy, that's how you can make a donation or continue to donate as so many of you have. It's preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, just in the last few hours, maybe 36, we have had lower court judges stopping the president's agenda on things like they found another illegal alien in El Salvador, a DEI, a sanctuary cities, proof of citizenship. It just goes on and on. It's like it's a plague spreading in our judicial system. What's happening? Why is it happening? How can we stop it? And what's happening with the Supreme Court? We'll discuss all of that today with our guest, Will Chamberlain, on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Last night, it was a 5-4 decision that the justices used to stop a lower court's order that was blocking the Trump administration from deporting migrants to El Salvador under that Alien Enemies Act. The court says the administration can resume the deportations using the Wartime Act, which hadn't previously been used since internment in World War II. But the high court did impose limits, saying the administration will have to begin offering some due process to allow these detainees to challenge the allegations that they're gang members. That could take the teeth out of using the Alien Enemies Act, which allowed the administration to expedite the deportations. Writing the lead dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said the court's ruling was giving the government, quote, extraordinary relief, and added the court should not reward the government's efforts to erode the rule of law. The Trump administration's response to the ruling, they called it a great day for justice in America. And Gail, they vowed more deportations are coming.
All right. So that's CBS. That's how they feel about what's going on. It's not how many of us feel. We don't really feel aliens in this country illegally here. I don't deserve due process like American citizens do. But we'll get into that with our next guest. Will Chamberlain serves as senior counsel to the Internet Accountability Project. That's one of the Mike Davis, that's his baby, one of his babies, along with the Article 3 Project. But Will also is the owner and editor-in-chief of Human Events. Human Events has a long, rich past. I used to be interviewed by Human Events all the time when I lived in D.C. They just have a great history. And so, of course, Will is an attorney, and he knows all things. We'll just see how much he knows. I have a lot of questions. I know he knows a lot. So, Will, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. I do have to clarify, I did sell my interest in Human Events a few years back, so I'm no longer involved with that project, although I'm very fond of the people who currently run it.
Okay. Well, so. I have an old bio then. Sorry about that. Okay. All right. So, Will, first let's jump. In the last, and now it's been about 36 hours, the courts have jumped in and judges have ordered Trump to bring back another illegal alien from El Salvador, to restore funds to schools practicing DEI, to restore funds to sanctuary cities, to drop a proof of citizenship mandate for voter registration, and you know, there's more. What's going on, Will, honestly, besides the obvious, what's going on here?
I mean, the way to think about this is it's resistance 2.0. If the first Trump administration was dealing with resistance from the civil service and the bureaucracy and the deep state, this is now the judicial resistance. So that's the simplest way to understand what's going on. You have liberal judges, for the most part, doing what they can to gum up the works of the second Trump administration.
Okay, so one of the things that's been complex, and there's been a lot of discussion about it, is the use of the Alien Enemies Act. My understanding is to remove illegal immigrants like the most famous one now, Obrego Garcia, to El Salvador, the member alleged of MS-13. And that is calling out the Alien Enemies Act. By the way, I'm not an attorney, so you'll figure that out because I stumble for the legal words. But Alien Enemies Act, when you invoke that, there is no, that kind of bypasses, as has traditionally, judicial action. Has it not? And so what's going on with this too, even with the Supreme Court?
So to clarify, the Alien Enemies Act applies to members of Tren de Aragua, a Venezuelan gang. So the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the El Salvadoran national, he's not actually covered by the Alien Enemies Act. He's literally just, he was deported under previous authority.
Okay.
He also already had gone through, a removal proceeding and was found to be removable. So the Alien Enemies Act didn't have much to do with him. I mean, his case is ridiculous in its own right, the way that the judges are trying to jump all over the administration and commandeer the administration's foreign policy, but it's a different thing. So in terms of your description of the Alien Enemies Act, yes, it allows the administration to skip over the normal removal process and some of the claims that an alien could make to try and stay in the country. Claims like asylum, claims like for withholding of removal, claims for not to be deported to a country because they violate the Convention Against Torture. There are some certain things using the Alien Enemies Act allows you to avoid. And so that's why the president invoked it. It historically has not been invoked that often. So the idea that it's not really a situation where there's a huge amount of precedent for its use. But what you can say about it is that by its own terms, it doesn't provide really much room for judicial review, especially not judicial review on the determination of whether or not there's an invasion or alien incursion. The only real role for judicial review here is to determine whether or not a specific alien falls under the category of people covered by the president's proclamation. So in this case, it would be, is the alien Tren de Aragua or not? That a judge could conceivably review. But that's it. If the alien is trying to Aragua, they need to go home.
All right. So you know that the Supreme Court, and this has been what? I guess this was last week or a few days ago, made a 7-2 decision, decided that the president has to pause deportations of illegal, now this is Venezuelans, the ones that, of course, taking over apartment buildings in Colorado, by the way, that he has to stop this. And it was a 7-2 decision. I don't understand this. What is that all about? Why in the world would we not want to, why would it not be legal for him to use that act to deport people who are actually, causing harm and trying to take some power in one of our states?
So a key point to understand, not that it absolves the Supreme Court of anything because they screwed up, but they screwed up in a way that I think people are, they screwed up for a different reason. Let's say it that way. So what they did was they put in place an administrative stay. They didn't actually make a decision on the merits. They didn't consider the substance of the arguments about the Alien Enemies Act. They just put in place an administrative stay to temporarily stop the deportation until they could consider the petition more fully. They still screwed up, right? It's still a ridiculous decision. And the reason why is because there never was a decision at the district court level or the appellate court level. Remember, all this happened last weekend over Good Friday and then Easter weekend. And the ACLU just, I don't have a better word for it than just spazzed out. They went to the district court, said, they're going to deport all these people immediately. Oh my gosh, you need to do something immediately. And if you don't rule in the next 45 minutes, we're going to treat it as though you denied our motion and go straight to the appeals court. The district court didn't rule because that's crazy. That's an absurd level of speed to demand of the district court, rule in 45 minutes or else. You're a litigant. You don't get to make that call. We will treat this urgently, but that's, give us a second. And they did the same thing at the Fifth Circuit. When the Fifth Circuit got the case, they're like, if you don't rule on this immediately, we're going to treat it as though you denied the motion. And then that's exactly what happened. They hadn't ruled immediately, and they went straight to the Supreme Court. Now, what that means, and this is really important for your audience to understand, the Supreme Court is not a place where you go to bring a case in the first instance. It's a court that does review. It has to review an underlying decision from a district court or an appellate court. The only cases that can be brought to it directly without an underlying decision to review are cases where it's literally spelled out in the Constitution. It's like the state of Texas suing the state of Oklahoma over water rights. When two states sue each other, then the Supreme Court can take that case in the first instance. In every other circumstance, they have to be a court of appeals. There has to be an underlying decision to review, which means that when the ACLU went to the Supreme Court had no jurisdiction. And that was Justice Alito's biggest point in dissent. We don't even have jurisdiction to hear this. There is no underlying decision. This is unbelievably irregular. And yet the Supreme Court still hasn't lifted this administrative stay. So, you know, for all the talk about, you know, the president doing lawless things, which is nonsense talk, the Supreme Court just did something unbelievably bizarre and lawless in imposing this administrative stay.
And seven of them. Let me read Alito's part of his dissent. Clarence Thomas joined him in this, and he said, in sum, literally, in the middle of the night, the court issued unprecedented and legally questionable relief without giving, as you said, the lower courts a chance to rule, without hearing from the opposing party, within 8 hours of receiving the application, with dubious factual support for its order, and without providing any explanation for its order, Alito wrote. It was also on Holy Saturday when he wrote this. I refused to join this court's order because we had no good reason to think that under the circumstances, issuing an order at midnight was necessary or appropriate. So here's the thing. What then, Will, is going on in the Supreme Court? We've had so many funky rulings from them. And I know I'm going to ask you about some individuals, but in general, what you read, even that Gorsuch should join this, is shocking to many people.
I mean, I think that, you know, within the week, you know, either, you know, certainly I probably either today or early next week, we're going to get an opinion from the Supreme Court, and they're going to lift this administrative stay. I think whoever on the court, you know, obviously you have to think about what the dynamic is, right? They get this. They're all probably at home with their families, all the justices. They get this urgent message from the court. One or two of the justices say, whoa, we really need to do something. They're going to send these people out of the country into a black hole if we don't do something. And so somehow seven justices agree to this stay while they're hanging out with their kids on Good Friday. I think when they actually, having had a chance to actually review what they're doing, I think a number of these justices are going to come back and agree that Alito and Thomas were right, that they never had jurisdiction to impose this order, that the ACLU just was wrong. But I'm an optimist. I mean, it's possible that that won't happen, but I think that that's the likely outcome here.
Well, we've seen Amy Coney Barrett join with the liberal branch of the court. It's been very disappointing. We've seen it happen over and over again. And now, of course, John Roberts is pretty squarely in that camp. Sometimes he surprises us and gives us a good decision, but really mostly not. It's really very discouraging because they have so much power, which brings me to this question. Will, you know, let me tell you, because you need to know, that we have three branches of government with equal powers, equal. The judicial, the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. So President Trump is the executive branch. And as I understand it constitutionally, the founders, when you read what they had in mind to have a strong executive. They didn't want a king, but they wanted a strong executive. But we've gotten into a place where the courts decide everything because the legislature are cowards. They have to be reelected. They don't want to do anything. So the courts have become preeminent. They're making all the decisions because they're not elected. I know you know this, but I'm stating this for the audience. But how then should the executive respond to a court like this, who it's now descending into, now this may be an overstatement, but it's flirting with lawlessness itself. How should the executive really respond if you were advising them?
I mean, I would say comply to the extent possible and otherwise kind of engage in a soft defiance. You know, the best analogy to what the court's doing now is really, I think, what the court tried to do to Nixon and Kissinger when they were conducting the Vietnam War. A lot of people don't know about this, but at one point, one of the Supreme Court justices imposed a stay and tried to order the bombing in Cambodia to stop. And Nixon and Kissinger called up the rest of the court and were like, you need to fix this. But in the interim, they just defied the order. They didn't publicly go out there and say, we're defying it, but they just ignored it. Because obviously the Supreme Court was way out in front of its skis. It was encroaching on executive authority, et cetera. I think we have more of that here. We have the Supreme Court really reaching and exceeding its authority, and we have district courts doing it every single day. And they're, I think the right point of view for the administration is we want to give the court a chance to withdraw, pull back from the brink here. We don't want to force them into this confrontation, but they're, at the same time, the president is the president and he controls the executive branch. And, for things that are in clear encroachment on his authority, he should just ignore.
Well, they're doing irreparable harm because the momentum of the administration was so good. The American people love what he's doing. This is what they voted for. I realize that's becoming a cliche, but it is. And this is what he's doing. He's doing everything he promised he would do, and the courts are doing nothing but nipping at his heels. And they have the power to actually slow it down, the Justice Department. Honestly, Will, how is that Justice Department going to handle everything that's being thrown their way, given that the thousands of attorneys, I'm saying thousands, it is something like that, who are sitting there in opposition anyway? How in the world are they going to advance all of these issues and defend all of these things?
I mean, it's just going to take really aggressive leadership. And I think that DOJ has it. I mean, I think Pam Bondi is really great, but I also think people like Harmeet Dhillon are really great. So I think I have confidence that they understand the mission. They're not going to tolerate being subverted by lower level career officials. And they're going to basically, force them to either comply with the wishes of the democratically elected and democratically accountable leadership, or go find another job, or go sit in a rubber room all day and play bridge. So I'm confident they can turn these agencies around.
Well, I hope so. I want that to happen, absolutely. And I'll be optimistic. If you're optimistic, I'm going to be optimistic with you. But this, it's like an epidemic now. I think personally, and I don't think it's this is common sense, that the court's refusal, or at least intervention, lower courts and certainly now the Supreme Court's intervention to stop these things has certainly sent a signal to these lower court judges. And it's like a breakout of measles. It's a breakout of court rulings that I don't know. I recognize that the Congress technically could stop this, but we both know that they don't have the will. They'll never be able to do that because they're not serious people right now. Some of them are, but most of them don't seem to be. So that leaves the president, or that leaves the court, the Supreme Court, with, I guess, authority over these lower courts. In other words, my question is, who's going to stop this, Will? Who's going to stop this? This is, like I said, a breakout of measles, and I don't see it stopping unless someone stops it.
I mean, it really is on either the Supreme Court to stop itself, right, to get a handle on what's going on, or the president to start ignoring it. And I mean, it's a terrible thing to say that, but it's a really difficult clash between the executive and the judiciary. And I think that, for a large part of this, the Supreme Court has been sitting on the sidelines and being very passive while the lower courts are, imposing all these injunctions, lawless injunctions on the president. And now violating their own procedures, they need to step out from the brink. It's on them. And I don't really know what happens in a world where they just refuse and they decide that, they actually get to run the country, because then they just have to find out that they don't have an army or a military that they can, their authority rests on their legitimacy. And if they lose it with they've already lost it with the left. Remember, you can think about how the left wanted them, all fired basically, and, wanted to pack the court. They lose it with the right too. People are just going to stop caring what they think, and we're just going to go to a very different system of government.
Yeah. Well, we hope for a change. It needs to change. It's just so corrupt. I certainly know about the legal world. I've been married to two attorneys. My husband was an FBI agent. And so we know how corrupt it is from the FISA court on down. It's just so discouraging. It's like a gut punch. And they are really the only thing standing between us and tyranny. And now they're causing tyranny. But I'm going to ask you about some of the justices, just your take. And you can plead the fifth if you want. But On Amy Coney Barrett, we had such high hopes for her, and there was such a big push by conservatives to get her in that court, and she was going to be our champion, and she has not been. And I'd just like to know what your take is on that. What happened there, Will?
I don't know. I mean, I think that maybe this is one of those cases where there was a little bit of willful blindness and people didn't really think, you know, have a good handle on what she thought about the world and what she thought about politics, because, you know, she's clearly a very serious Catholic and a religious person, but there are plenty of, you know, like Catholic moderates and Catholic liberals out there. I don't get the sense that Amy Coney Barrett is meaningfully conservative.
Yeah. No, I don't think so either. I think we can see that now. All right, Ketanji Brown Jackson, I honestly, other than just she occasionally it will hit the news, she makes some kind of really ridiculous, clueless statements. Is that too critical? I mean, you follow the court more closely than I do.
No.
That's
what happens when you constrain yourself to, you know, basically say, I mean, I think Biden said that the only picks he was looking at for the Supreme Court to replace Breyer were black women. It's like, well, you massively reduced the number of qualified candidates then. I mean, there were something like three or four qualified candidates. And so, and some of the qualified candidates aren't going to be necessarily the best leading lights of the left. And as a result, I mean, I ultimately think this is good for the conservative point of view, because I don't think she's ever going to be able to persuade any of the conservative justices that they're wrong about anything. Don't think she's, you know, she's just not good enough at the law.
That's a good point. All right. So I just saw this article this morning, and you might have seen it too. It's actually a photo of Justice Clarence Thomas wearing, you know, a studio headset like I have on. And the title of the article is Clarence Thomas Resorts to Wearing Noise-Canceling Headphones for Drowning Out Ketanji Brown Jackson. Anyway, a little humor there. That was so cool. Of course, that's from the B. But anyway, it was a good one. All right, but now to something serious. Before I even ask you this, I want to play a clip of, this is not related to the subject matter we're discussing, but I want to bring to people's mind who Norm Eisen is. And this will lead to a question you might sense what it's going to be. This is clip five. Let's listen.
Well, Chris, if you draw that line and you take 10 steps over the line, that's where Donald Trump is. These baseless allegations of kickbacks at USAID, meddling with the authority of Congress under Article 1 of the Constitution, they get to say if Trump does or does not spend or freeze the USAID money. These are funds that Congress has appropriated to help pregnant moms around the world, kids to get vaccines, the hungry around the world. What happened to America as the city on the hill? I was taught that we proudly help people around the world. So Donald Trump is over the legal line, the constitutional line, and way over the moral line with these baseless allegations of kickbacks.
All right, that's the voice of Norm Eisen. Norm is, you know, well known in the to the leftist community and has been attributed with being like the architect of opposing Donald Trump's policies. But here's the twist. Mike Benz reported just a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, that John Roberts and Norm Eisen actually spent a week living in an official residence of the U.S. ambassador at the time, Norm Eisen, in the Czech Republic. And they said that they didn't deny it. They said that they spent it focused on legal matters. Now, Will, I'm not going to infer, because I don't have the heart to do that, anything other than what in the world is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? Now, this is in 2014, before Trump's presidency. Okay, we'll give him that. What is he doing spending 2 weeks with a man who has obviously vitriolic hatred for Donald Trump?
I don't know. You know, in 2014, this is well before Donald Trump had even joined the modern political scene. Norm Eisen was just probably a liberal lawyer in good standing. It's hard to say. I don't want to hold, you know, there's plenty to hold against Chief Justice Roberts when it comes to his recent conduct. I don't want to, like, hate on the guy for having friendships almost 10 years ago before any of the current, and really before any of the conduct that Norm Eisen is engaged in was obvious. I paid some attention to politics in 2014. I'd never heard of Norm Eisen in those years, so I don't want to go too hard on him. But that said, Norm Eisen is a certifiable loon. He's wrong about on the law on this question. The president absolutely has the right to pause funding to find out, especially funding that has not been specifically allocated to specific projects, and to figure out whether that funding makes sense to continue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. And if it's a fair enough thing, I have no wish to jump to a pejorative on that. It's just strange. And so because we just heard who Norm Eisen is and you described it. So it seems like a strange relationship because I'm sure he's not suddenly crazy. I think he probably was crazy then. But crazy in a bad way, like crazy like a fox. All right. Another subject before we let you go, Will. I just read this morning from William Jacobson. You probably know Mr. Jacobson, mm-hmm. Professor Jacobson, with Legal Insurrection. And he is writing this morning that Trump is targeting the American Bar Association accreditation power over law schools. So I don't know if this is news to you this morning. Maybe it came out before. I think he signed an executive order. The whole issue here is that the American Bar Association's Council of the Section of Legal Education and Admissions to the Bar is really the only arbiter for accrediting a Juris Doctor programs. And, of course, they're forcing diversity, equity, inclusion on these law schools. You're not that well. You're the attorney. What do you think about that?
I think it's a good thing. The ABA is not a nonpartisan institution. It's an institution working for the left. It's part of the problem as to why law schools are so deeply far to the left. And, I mean, I think anything that weakens the power and influence of the ABA is good. It's good for the right-wing movement. It's also good for the Constitution and the law. And I think law schools in general, they've really gotten away with being deeply, deeply partisan places. They've just completely staffed to the gills with liberals. I remember being at Georgetown, and there were, like, two conservatives on the court, and they were on the faculty out of a few hundred, and they were both libertarians. You know, there's nobody there who even really represents the mainstream view of the judges on the Supreme Court, let alone just the average American.
So, Will, how did you survive in an atmosphere like that? Were you conservative when you went to law school, or let's just say a strict constitutionist?
I was conservative, and I mean, part of it was kind of fun. Actually, I got to argue with the professors all the time. It gave me a chance to really get inside their heads, and also the beauty of it is, you know, the law school is not like college. Everything's graded anonymously. They don't see your name when they're grading your essay. So if you just write an essay that is correct and the best version of a law school essay, they judge it, you know, the teachers can't penalize you for being conservative.
I did not know that because that was my next question was, didn't they punish you, though, for those arguments? But obviously they couldn't if it's anonymous. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that the American Bar Association does, of course, is they make recommendations that are like the gold standard for attorneys, attorneys for judges in the lower courts, and of course during Supreme Court nominations, they are the gold standard. The standing of these attorneys or these judges, by their assessment, is used to appoint these judges. And there is some talk of removing that as well, Will. So your thoughts about that?
We should remove that. They're not the gold standard. They're biased to the left. We can figure out who's a good judge and who's not without the help of the ABA.
Is there a replacement? I mean, could that be, is that like a cocaine for people that are doing not the nominations process? Are they so wedded to that, attorneys through the generations, that could be eliminated without any kind, without too much trauma to the legal world?
Oh yeah, it could be. They're not essential. They're just not. I mean, they have an accreditation, right? You can just strip them of that. They have no official role in the Supreme Court nomination process at all. So, I mean, they're just a outside group saying what they want, you know, speaking just like any other outside group does, just like Article 3 Project does. Yeah. I mean, really, like, we should, you know, we at Article 3 Project might well start doing these kind of rating systems so that the ABA can just be ignored.
Yes. Well, one last question. This is your world, the legal world, and it's from an outsider looking in. It just seems so convoluted, and that it's gone. My husband went to the University of Illinois Law School, and they have gotten so woke since he left that he's just disgusted. Every missive they send, and of course he will not give money. And that's just the University of Illinois, which used to be a really fine law school, notable. What is the fix for this? And are you optimistic or pessimistic about its future, meaning the whole legal world, judges, attorneys, the whole system?
I mean, the fix, there's the fix is just starting. Like, we really haven't started to fight back against these law schools and force them to obey the law. We're going to do that now. I don't know how to fix the, you know, law in general, but it just Republican governance. This is why friends don't let friends vote for Democrats. If you control the government, you control who gets nominated for judgeships, and you can reshape the judiciary to make it more and more and more conservative. And you can continue to punish law schools if they don't obey the law and discriminate against conservatives. And enough of that over time, I think, will change things.
Yes, I hope so. And I'm sorry, I have another, I just have to ask you this. There was talk of Sotomayor being unhealthy, and the left was begging her to step aside so Joe Biden could appoint another justice. I don't know the situation there. Is she healthy or not, or do we know?
I don't know the details of her health, so I don't really have anything to say on that topic.
Okay, so, all right, but we can only hope that the president, we don't want anybody to get sick, but we hope that the president has another chance to appoint a constitutional conservative. Will Chamberlain, thank you. Senior counsel to the Internet Accountability Project. We didn't talk anything about the internet. We'll have to do that next time, Will. But thank you so much for joining us this morning. We do appreciate it. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
When you become a monthly sponsor of Preborn, you will actually get a picture of the babies you help to save. That's pretty good plum, isn't it? But also, you can sponsor what's called a day of life. And that's sponsoring an entire day of women, you know, having ultrasounds at these clinics. And it's more money. It's a bigger investment. For a gift of $5,000, you can sponsor an entire day. And so that's why we call it a day of life. If you'd like to do that, if you can afford to do that, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, we started the show talking about that case in Maryland with the Supreme Court this week, in the last couple of weeks, actually hearing this. And we were able to hear some of their arguments, which are fascinating. And so I thought you would find it interesting. Sotomayor weighs in on these books that are, you know, from my perspective, horrific for children. And she's sort of defending these books. You'll see her cleverly kind of interject, well, it's not really this, it's not really that, is it? And then you'll hear an interruption by Justice Alito, who to me is one of my champions in the court. And so let's listen to that exchange.
You're not going there.
So, Mr. Baxter, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Let me just finish this.
Sure.
One. So just answer my question. Is looking at the pictures, is there any affidavit from any parent that merely looking at people getting married, holding hands, none of them are even kissing in any of these books. The most they're doing is holding hands. That mere exposure to that is coercion.
Our parents would object to that. They thought.
All right, now, so let's move to what I think your objection is. I think your objection is to the student guidance, correct?
Our objections would be even to reading books that violate our clients' religious beliefs. They've been, their faith teaches, for example, they shouldn't be exposed to information about sex during their years of innocence without being accompanied by moral principles. And here we have both books that violate their moral principles and instruction that tells them that, for example, they can pick their pronouns based on the way they feel, not even just for based on their gender, but how they feel from moment to moment.
Mr. Baxter.
Before we move away from the book that Justice Sotomayor was referring to, Uncle Bobby's Wedding, I've read that book as well as a lot of these other books. Do you think it's fair to say that all that is done in Uncle Bobby's Wedding is to expose children to the fact that there are men who marry other men?
No, Your Honor. And this court in Obergefell promised that parents would be able to continue to teach what this court called decent and honorable beliefs, that same-sex marriage is immoral according to their beliefs. And it's a far stretch from that for schools to compel students to attend. Parents are paying taxes. They have to pay at threat of criminal fines or penalties or the expense of private school. And then to have teachers telling them things that are directly contrary to their
beliefs. The book has a clear message. And a lot of people think it's a good message, and maybe it is a good message, but it's a message that a lot of people who hold on to traditional religious beliefs don't agree with. I don't think anybody can read that and say, well, this is just telling children that there are occasions when men marry other men. Uncle Bobby gets married to his boyfriend, Jamie, and everybody's happy, and everything is, you know, it portrays this. Everyone accepts this, except for the little girl, Chloe, who has reservations about it. But her mother corrects her. No, you shouldn't have any reservations about this. As I said, it has a clear moral message.
Wait a minute. The reservation is about...
Can I finish, please? Yeah. It has a clear moral message, and it may be a good message. It's just a message that a lot of religious people disagree with.
Sam Alito has just become such a champion on the court, along with Justice Thomas. Sam was the one who wrote, you know, the opinion on overturning Roe versus Wade that was leaked out of the court mysteriously. John Roberts never got to the bottom of that. He just never quite could figure out who leaked that, even after all these investigations. We have our suspicions. I think John Roberts, I'll just say what I think, since Will was being very careful, and I don't blame him, but I don't have to be so careful. I think there's some serious problems. I felt that for a very long time, and of course it's coming out in his rulings, but I don't think going to Prague and being with Norm Eisen for 2 weeks speaks highly of him, even if it was 2014. Because John Roberts was supposed to be the conservative, really conservative appointee of President George W. Bush. I'll never forget him taking his oath of honor with his, he looks so neat and clean, so It is important. And his children were so beautifully dressed. His wife was really very attractive. And it just seemed like and he's from Indiana. So you had a lot of, you inferred a lot of things from that. And then not long into that, John began to make decisions that were not conservative at all. So he was appointed in 2003. And so this is 2014, and 2014, Barack Obama was president then. I'm just giving the timeline. And I don't know what Norm Eisen was doing during that time. I can only imagine, given what he has done to President Trump this last few years, that he was that same slimy opposition or opponent to all things conservative, what John Roberts should have been standing for. So I can't imagine them spending this time, 2 weeks together. and even in 2014 before Trump came on the scene. I think that's a problem. And so I thought you'd want to know about that. So Mike Benz is the one who reported that story. And again, they have not denied, at least, they have not denied that. Norm Eisen hasn't. And so it's a symptom. It's a sign. It's a sign. That's all. I mean, we hear people say things or do things, and it shows us something about them, right? And so that shows us something about John Roberts. And I don't think that something is good. And it might explain why he seems to me to be continue to get worse in the court. But all right, so we, you know what, we just hope that President Trump can stand against this wave of opposition. In fact, I'll tell you one other thing. Remember the Judge Boasberg who started all of this with the Abrego Garcia demanding that he be brought back from El Salvador from the prison, demanding that the planes stop or the planes return and bring him back? That was Boasberg, the judge from the D.C. Circuit. So guess who appointed Judge Boasberg to the FISA court, the most trusted court in the land short of the Supreme Court, the FISA court, the secret court, the one that is supposed to be highly trusted with espionage, with things about American citizens that are brought before the court that skip some of the legal maneuvers that are usually used in bringing them to the court. And so, of course, we know the FISA court was completely and totally corrupted during the 2016 election. And so guess who served on that court? Appointed by John Roberts. It was Judge Boasberg, James Boasberg, from the D.C. Circuit. So that's just another thing about John Roberts that, and these guys are friends. So these are signs, and now we're seeing the fruits of that. We're seeing John Roberts really show his true colors. And I wish someone would, you know, retire, step down, not Justice Thomas. Someone on the left would do that so that President Trump can appoint a truly conservative justice for that court. We pray for that. We should pray for that because it does matter. As I started out saying in the show today, it does matter. These courts affect our lives tremendously and affect our culture. And we need to make sure that the people that are appointed have the integrity and honor to do what's right for our country and to rule really on the Constitution as it was intentionally composed. All right. Well, thank you for listening today. I really appreciate that. And I want to, of course, remind you that Timothy Plan makes this possible. They, along with Preborn. But Timothy Plan helps you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.